Welcome to Vegas Inc. Radio. I'm Dylan Goldberg, host of the show and business editor of Vegas Inc. and the Las Vegas Sun. Over the next half hour, we'll discuss two important conventions that recently visited Las Vegas. The most recent was the International CES, the Consumer Electronics Show that's been coming to Vegas for years. The weekend before that was the National Council of Legislators for Gaming States that talked about gaming legislation that we can expect in the coming year. Joining me is reporter Ron Sylvester and reporter Rick Velotta. Welcome, Rick and Ron.
Thank you.
Hello.
So let's talk about CES first, because that's the bigger of the two conventions. Rick, this is a huge tourist boon. How many people? What are the details of it?
Well, when the very early on, they were anticipating there would be at least 150,000 people coming in for CES. It looks like that number is actually low. It's going to be more like 155, or I guess the past tense, 155 to 160,000 somewhere coming to Las Vegas from all parts of the world. So this is in without a doubt the largest show that we have in Las Vegas, and it's something that I think everybody looks forward to, just because not only is it a big boost for the economy, and it's one of the first things that comes out of the blocks in the new year, but it's also the largest, and people just get excited about all the products. And I know that Ron here has been over on the floor and seen jillions of products. So that's something that's part of the fun of this show.
And how much of an economic impact does it have on the city? It's millions of dollars?
Oh, yes. Close to $200 million in non-gaming economic impact, which means that's before even somebody puts a single penny into a slot machine. That's what we're going to be seeing in terms of things like dinners and shows and things that people go to when they come to Las Vegas for any kind of a show. Certainly these same folks that come out and want to look at the gadgets are also going to want to see some of the things that our community has that we're famous for, our restaurants and some of our shopping and some of our great entertainment here. So they boom when there's a lot of people in town, and this is certainly a lot of people.
And the room rates boom as well.
I think that's kind of a sticker shock thing for a lot of people who may have come to Las Vegas not knowing that the show is in town. And when they show up and they see that their room rates are, you know, five or six times as high as they would have expected them to be. Some of those rates were quite high. I saw some rooms that were advertised over at the Aria for close to $900
Wow.
a night. So that's quite a bit on the high end. But of course, you know, this is a supply and demand situation. The demand is obviously very high because there are so many people here. So the resorts can justify the fact that they jack up the rates for that particular purpose.
And some of that expense, I can tell you, is gas spent with me sitting in traffic on Paradise Road.
Yeah, I want to be nowhere near it during the convention. However, it's not open to the public, which I know a lot of people who read about it or hear about it are disappointed. Why is that?
It's mostly just because it's an industry show. What they want to do is focus primarily on having business-to-business commerce going on. They want the people who are going to be selling these consumer electronics to come to the booths and look and see how the gadgets work from the manufacturer. So most of the people who are at the show are some industry professionals. Now, it's kind of interesting. About 5 or 6 years ago, CES did have a public day where they actually brought people in to allow them to go walk through it, but they were so swamped with people that they decided to abandon that idea.
Gotcha. And so, Ron, as Rick mentioned, you walk the floor. What cool products can we anticipate in the coming year or years?
Well, one of the coolest things I saw at the Samsung keynote was foldable screens, like flexible screens for your cell phone. And I mean, you can like fold up and you can bend. And one of the advantages to that is if you drop it, it doesn't break. I mean, they've got unbreakable screens, which, you know, is kind of amazing. And then there's all sorts of like different music type of accessories, like these like Bluetooth speakers that you can like hook to your belt. I kept comparing them to they're bringing back the boombox, except they're smaller and they sound better. I mean, there was actually a speaker that you could hang on your belt, but I also said you could hang it on your ear and have the boombox type thing, except you don't have to rest it on your shoulder. And in fact, a lot of the manufacturers were comparing that to, you know, the boomboxes of the 80s. You know, for a long time we've been plugging in to our earbuds and nobody's been hearing our music, and now people want to blast it so everybody can hear it, so they have these little speakers. And
is that a good or a bad thing?
I don't know. Well, I don't know. We'll see. I kind of liked it better when I didn't have to hear everybody else's. But the one of the other things I saw was a watch that connects to your smartphone, and so it makes so you can wear basically your phone on your wrist, which reminded me of the Dick Tracy watches. You know, if you're old enough to remember, Dick Tracy was a comic book detective, and he used to talk on his watch. And that was kind of a joke that I had, is like, when are we going to get the Dick Tracy watches and flying cars? And so now it looks like we're getting the Dick Tracy watch. One of the big disappointments is I have yet to see a flying car.
But they have robot cars,
yeah,
driverless cars.
They have driverless cars, and they also kind of to go along with this watch. Chevy has come out with this thing where you plug your iPhone into the car, and it makes your iPhone the car radio. So then you can use all sorts of different apps in your car. Up until now, one of the things that they've been talking about is that you, once you bought the car, all the apps were installed on your car. And so then in order to upgrade your car, you had to buy a new car. Well, now it's basically your car console is just an extension of your iPhone. So now you can upgrade apps and add apps without having to, sell your car to get, you know, more stuff on your radio.
I understand there's also a table that's a touchscreen, essentially a ginormous tablet.
Well, 3M had this at the G2E, the gaming expo, because they were selling it as a touchscreen game table for electronic games. But then they had an even bigger one. It was like a huge... a huge thing for that they were selling to museums for like interactive museum type things, and then of course there are other companies that have done similar things where it's like your TV becomes a tablet. You know, you can hang it on your wall and use touch screens with it, and it's just kind of crazy.
I think they have one of those to a smaller scale at the Mott Museum. In fact,
oh wow. So they're ahead of the curve there.
Yeah. And then one of the most impressive things for me is the technology itself is not new, but they're starting to find ways to put it into consumer use. Is this 4K or this Ultra HD display, and you're seeing that go into more TVs, more tablets, and things like that. So the clarity of it is you guys would look better on this screen than you look sitting in person.
That's not saying much. And the TV's
not better, but clearer, you know, than you would do in real life. It's just, I mean, the display is just, it's stark.
And I imagine around here that would be a fantastic product just because of all the television screens we have for watching sports and our sports books, things like that. Such technology, I'm sure, will be one of the first things that some of our local properties would look at. And certainly some of the rooms are equipped with some of the best TV screens that we've ever seen. So I would imagine, Ron, maybe you would probably agree that Las Vegas would be a market for some of these types of television sets.
Oh, yeah, especially some of these rooms they're charging $900 a week
right?
for. They need some of those smart TVs in there.
And they're light, right? I mean,
yeah.
Tens of pounds?
This was a 58-inch TV that Panasonic unveiled that was 27 pounds and a half an inch thick. It's basically like, you know, if anybody's tried that to put one of those flat screen TVs on their wall and you've got to find the studs and stuff, this is like hanging a picture. I mean, there were when he said this is only 27 pounds and a half inch thick, there were actually gasps in the audience when they were unveiling this.
Well, that's good news for homeowners if they can afford them one day. For those just joining us, you're listening to Vegas Inc. Radio, part of Waking Up with the Sun. We're here every Monday at 7 a.m. on KUNV 91.5 The Source. I'm your host, Dellen Goldberg, business editor of Vegas Inc. and the Las Vegas Sun, and I'm speaking today with reporters Rick Velotta and Ron Sylvester. We're talking right now about the International CES, the Consumer Electronics Show that was in Las Vegas this past week. You attended some of the keynote speeches. They get big names, everyone from Snooki to Bill Clinton to attend. You can decide which one's a bigger name. But who made news amongst, I know Panasonic had a speaker, Samsung had a speaker, of course, the president. What'd they have to say?
Well, a couple of big political figures. We had Newark Mayor Cory Booker, who made big headlines of the way with the way he reacted to Hurricane Sandy, and he was quite the personality during the Panasonic keynote because Panasonic was going to be moving their headquarters from Secaucus up the road to Newark, and so they had the mayor there, and then Bill Clinton was at the Samsung keynote. He is a big supporter of a initiative that Samsung has to provide technology education in Africa, and he gave quite a speech that was both kind of stirring and controversial, because he was talking about how technology can kind of bring the world together, and also the importance of what we're seeing at CES and conventions like that, of just, you know, allowing people to communicate better and communicate more. And the examples he used was some controversial subjects like gun control and climate change, and he basically said that this is going to allow people to get their facts straight. And of course, they were such controversial subjects that some of the bloggers and stuff afterwards were taking this all different ways. But I think what he was trying to convey was that this will help sort out fact from fiction. He talked about the gun lobby, killing the assault weapons ban after it had passed, when he was president, and said that, in the not too distant future, people will be able to kind of sort out what some sort of lobby tells them from the facts, just because they'll have more information available to them.
And getting these big name people, obviously having a Bill Clinton or a Snoop Dogg who's been here in past years or whoever, adds credence to your brand, or at least attention. But if it's not open to the public, why, Rick, do having these people matter? Why do they pay such big bucks to get them?
Well, even the people who are in these businesses that sell these products are wowed by big names. They're gonna go to these booths just to see a Tim Tebow and a Ludacris and the folks that are out there endorsing these products. The companies that manufacture these things are paying big bucks to have these people endorse their wares, and they know that they're going to attract attention, whether that's just from the general public or whether it's from somebody who's selling these devices in a store in downtown Chicago. So it's one of those things that I think that it appeals across the lines, and certainly a number of these companies have different types of celebrities to process to different demographics within their selling audience. So you'll see a company that will have some an unusual mix of celebrities that will be endorsing their products and then making stage appearances during the keynote speeches. I think that there were several different entertainers. Maroon 5, I know, was one of the entertainers that performed at one of the keynote speeches. And this is kind of a trademark of CES to really make a big festive event out of these coming out parties for these products. And the funny thing is that some of these products have been out for several months already, but this is just kind of the official party that kind of welcomes the public to seeing them.
There's a reason that the S stands for show. I mean, they have stages, they have, stars, and Samsung had, in its keynote, had both Bill Clinton and Las Vegas style dancers. And I mean, this is a show. It's not, well, and while it's not open for the public, it is to wow the people who are going to distribute these products for them and get, try to get those products out to the public. Everybody, you know, kind of the joke I have is everybody who comes to this show wants to be like the next VCR, which is one of the things that was debuted at this show, and not the Laserdisc player.
Right. Yeah,
and, you know, and one other thing, too, is that they're competing with for eyeballs of the media, too. There's like more than 5,000 media credentialed for this particular show. And they know that if they can get attention from any media, that that's going to be good for them because they are competing with 2,000 other people or other companies that are out there displaying their goods. So they want to stand out somehow. And if it's going to take a celebrity to do that, that's how they'll do it.
And there's been some talk about sort of the dwindling luster, if you will, of CES in the past couple of years. Like you said, in the past, it's been the place to showcase your new products. And now maybe not so much. Do you think it still holds the same weight it did a decade ago?
Well, there were a lot of people who were kind of talking a little bit about this last year when it was announced that Microsoft was no longer going to be the pre-show keynote speaker sponsor. But then, surprisingly, Steve Ballmer shows up in one of the keynotes this year. So maybe they are still part of the presence. I don't know. I think some of the companies are looking to Microsoft for some leadership on this. They wanted to kind of shy away because they felt they could make a bigger splash by just having one of their own events up in Washington and put this on instead of being one of 2,000 companies out there putting out their best stuff. They don't have to compete so much. So maybe it is kind of losing a little bit of its luster, but you talk to the CES people, they're excited, and the fact that they've got 155,000 people there tells them that there's still a good market for this.
Yeah, whoever said CES is losing its luster has not had to sit in the traffic on Paradise. I mean, there's a ton of people, and the buzz of the atmosphere. Even though this is my first one, I mean, it's still really electric.
They need to get monorail tickets, Ron.
Yeah, exactly.
Can go above the traffic.
They've got, the monorail tickets and fewer buses.
Well, speaking of which, people were waiting up to a half an hour at the airport for a cab to get to CES, or at least their hotels.
And actually, that was a good thing because in the past, it's been more than an hour long on some of these waits, and they put in a record number of passengers into taxi cabs at McCarran on the Monday prior to the startup of CES. So and it broke the record by like a couple thousand riders, which is astonishing. It was a huge number. So the fact that they were able to do that and keep the wait times down to 30 minutes was actually a good thing. And the reason why they think that's the case is because, one, you've got Terminal 3 out there, so there's actually two big taxi lines to accommodate people. And they were coming in not just internationally, but some of the domestic carriers coming into Terminal 3. And two, those who were standing in line said, oh, well, it's only, 15, 20, 30 minutes. I can do this, so I'm not going to seek out another way to get to my hotel, whether that's on a van or renting a car or something else to get to the hotel. They will just wait that line out, and then as a result, we have large numbers of people using cabs.
And nobody, they're all coming in town, so they've never had to try to get a cab on New Year's Eve.
Right. And on a local note, our own Cox had a big announcement at the event. Cable is going to be available in a different way coming soon.
Basically, what the system has been set up, and it's a partnership that they have with Cisco to put this together. If you have a cable box and you get the 90 stations that they get in part of their regular service, you'll be able to use the Cisco technology in the boxes that they have to be able to put that product into another device, such as a tablet, a cell phone, and then you can watch your Cox programming on the go. As long as you have an internet signal, you're going to be able to watch your Cox channel line, your product line, portably wherever you want it to go. So that could be in another room in your house, or it could be on the go someplace. So you get to take the Cox service that you have from your cable at home on the road, which is pretty exciting technology for people who don't want to miss their television. Of course, they also plug into the DVR systems, and they've got a new DVR mechanism that will record, I think it's 6 shows at one time. I think that's a record for a DVR. Plus, it has a couple thousand hours of storage, so you can store all kinds of content. So you can time shift your viewing habits if your show comes on sometime when you're not at home. So,
and I know a lot of the pay cable, you know, HBO, Showtime, they have similar services.
Yes.
To compete,
but this is for the standard service. This is for the things that come into your box now that maybe not be the premium stations. But you're right. That would be something that would cost a little extra to have that. If you have HBO or Showtime or some of those premium stations, you'd still have to pay the premium to do that, to make it portable. But these are set up that the established stations that come through the box now are things that you can take with you. So you can watch local news and local sports on television when you're elsewhere.
Well, this is great news for all the people on the go who can't miss their Law and Order or whatever.
All I can think about is there are some people out there who will try to do this while they're driving.
Let's hope not. You're listening to Vegas Inc. Radio, part of Waking Up with the Sun. We're here every Monday at 7 a.m. on KUNV 91.5 The Source. Let's switch gears now and talk about a different convention that was here a couple days ago, the National Council of Legislators from Gaming States. It's a coalition of state leaders with an interest in gaming, as the name implies. And Rick, this was a 3 or 4 day conference. What was the takeaway? What are the big issues?
Well, I thought it was interesting, and you know, we live here in Las Vegas, so we have this gaming culture all around us. But most of the time, we don't really think about what some of the state legislators from other places think about the industry and what they have in mind in terms of how they can compete with Nevada. So it was interesting from that perspective just to hear some of these perspectives from these state legislators from California, from Florida, from Missouri. They were all there, and from New Jersey. They were all there talking about some of the same issues that we've been talking about. And I think one of the big takeaways that I got was that this whole idea that a federal legislation for internet poker is a slam dunk isn't the case. Well, obviously the feds haven't taken it up, but there's I think a lot of sentiment around here that the states will take it up. Well, not so fast. They look at some of the state legislative things, and they have different ideas on how they can make money, and they look at Nevada as the competition, maybe as like the bad guy. They don't want Nevada to have an advantage over them, so they're going to try to set up rules that are going to be good for their own interests. I think that's interesting because I don't know, people that live in Las Vegas seem to have the impression that this online poker is just right around the corner, and it may not be. It may be a little bit tougher, especially if some of these states go in different directions than what Nevada wants to go.
Well, and I think that's interesting because in this debate you hear about arguments that Nevada can be the leader and the brain trust of this whole industry, and that's why we should get this legislated. But it sounds like, in fact, if it were to be legislated, and particularly Senator Harry Reid, as you wrote in your Vegas Inc. column this week, is a leader in this. If Dean Heller were to step up and help him, that might actually cause even more resentment toward us.
Yes, I think so. And I mean, let's be real here. Nevada does have an advantage. We've been doing this longer than everybody else has. So we do have some expertise. Our gaming regulators are looked upon as the best of the best in the world. They keep track of things that are changing with changing technology. So we do have a gold standard here for the way we oversee our gaming, and certainly online poker is something that's a little bit more complicated than a lot of people realize, because there have to be the verification process to make sure that people who are playing from places where it's legal and that they're of age to play legally. So it's a different type of an environment, a different type of world, and certainly the while Nevada has an advantage on this thing, I think that the California people don't really want us to see that have that much of an advantage, unless maybe we have this intrastate compact between the two states in which residents from California can play in Nevada and vice versa. Then maybe they'll change their tune a little bit, but then the whole tax regime over in California is a lot different, and they might want to see more of a cut towards going to the state than what Nevada would, because our tax rate is obviously the lowest of any gaming regime in the country.
Were there any other big issues that came up? Obviously, internet poker and internet gaming is the biggie, but was there talk about smoking in casinos or other issues at hand?
Well, smoking in the casinos is actually something that they addressed earlier on, but before this conference. But there is some idea of trying to get smoking out of casinos and put that in national legislation. I don't think that's going to go anywhere. They're certainly trying to get a number of different states to adopt this. Colorado has done it. But to see that happen in Nevada, I really think that's an uphill climb. You're not going to see it, although I think there are a lot of advocates out there who would like to see it. And certainly, you know, the whole idea of smoke-free casinos is something that has been talked about a lot. In New Jersey, there's a smoke-free casino that's operating now, and they're contemplating going back to allowing smoking. So, you know, it's an issue that's going to be around for a long time, and it's certainly something that the state legislators are going to be looking at too.
So do you envision any sort of federal casino laws in the near future? Do you think it's all going to be, it sounds like, a state-by-state approach?
Right now it's looking like state-by-state. I think that one of the things that Nevada is doing that's kind of interesting is that they are there's a new piece of legislation that will be introduced in this upcoming session to which they would give the governor authority to negotiate a compact with another state that has similar licensing provisions as we do. So you're talking probably about New Jersey, California as possibilities. Well, some of the theories on that is that if the states do have these cross-border compacts, that maybe that will force the state to, you know, force their hand a little bit, and they'll say, gee, we really do have to get involved in this thing and perhaps come up with some federal legislation. That, again, is what the industry wants. And when I say the industry, not everybody in the industry wants that. Certainly, Sheldon Adelson over at Las Vegas Sands is opposed to online poker. But the fact is that most of the industry does support some form of federal legislation that not only would set a consistent regulatory regime across state lines, but it would also establish some form of taxation so that everybody gets a piece of the action when they divide up the profits.
And interestingly enough, again, in your column in Vegas Inc., you mentioned that the majority of the American population actually doesn't even want this.
Well, this is a Fairleigh Dickinson University report that was brought to the attention of the conference by one of their panelists, who said that you know, this university has gone out and taken a poll, and that 67% of the people really want to keep it illegal. Well, I think that he was kind of trumpeting a cause of on his own, but at the same time, if those facts are true, then maybe this whole notion of federal legislation of online poker, online gaming for that matter, is something that we're never going to see happen, or at least not something in the next 5 to 10 years, as I think a lot of people anticipated and were hoping for. Certainly there are online poker players who are advocating and lobbying for this to happen because they just see it as a fun, you know, thing to do on a Saturday night, is play poker with somebody. Maybe you don't know who they are, but they're sitting at a table thousands of miles away from you in Rhode Island or something. So I don't see that's something that's really going to happen anytime soon. This was borne out by this lame duck session where nothing happened.
Absolutely, and the state legislature is going to convene in a matter of a couple weeks, so we'll have to
see what happens on that Assembly Bill 5.
Exactly, absolutely. Well, Rick and Ron, thank you so much for being with us. This is Vegas Inc. Radio, part of Waking Up with the Sun. We're here every Monday at 7 a.m. on KUNV 91.5 The Source. I'm your host, Dellen Goldberg, business editor of Vegas Inc. Thanks to Steven Zeller, our producer, and the KUNV team. And thanks to you for listening. Enjoy your day.